Yeah, so I actually wanted to get a little bit into that first stunt within the Dark Knight trilogy, well, the second film in particular. And I know you were one of the guys actually on the wire in the bank robbery scene. And I was kind of wondering, what was that experience like planning that out?
I have a very I was very lucky enough to have a very good background in wire work because of working for Simon Paynes for so many years and being quite practical. So I've rigged a lot of different wire gags and stuff like that. And I got to perform quite a lot on wires in my career when I was younger, and on like Vertical Limit and Tomb Raiders and Private Ryan and projects like that, being on the end of one, getting blown up or flying through the air and stuff like that. So yeah, it's great. I mean, always loved it. And it's also the aspect of technically getting something ready and figuring out a way to do something so the body, because when you're on the end of that wire, it puts you physically in the space you need to be in, whether it's flying or throwing you or dropping you. It's then up to you to do your part, the drama part, you know, the physical drama. So yeah, I loved it. And you know, we're very lucky. I think the most challenging wire rigs and gags, what you know they call them gags, the stunt side of it, on all three of the Batmans was on the last one. You know, I remember in the conversations, and Chris was like, you know, we might have to go CG here, Tom, because you know we want to have four people out the back of a C-130 or big aircraft. It was a C-130. And I was like, give me a day or so to think about this and call, you know, some friends of mine and people I know. And I was like, no, we can do this for real. He's like, are you serious? I was like, it's never been done, but I know I can do it. And he's like, okay, it's not an open checkbook, but show, you know, proof of concept. So that's what we did. And, you know, and it's in the movie, you know, so that's a good thing. And, you know, so it's
Yeah,
good.
I actually heard you actually had 8 days allocated to pulling that stunt off, and you actually pulled it off in just 2.5 days. I'm actually kind of wondering what the planning process was like, and how did you do it so efficiently?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to also the rest of your department's camera director, things like that. You know, we had 8 days prep for this, and you know, we're only going to fly one. Let's call them a mission, one mission a day, and weather. We had weather cover because you know, I convinced Chris to shoot it in Scotland because he loved the location I showed him, and it worked really well for his story. So we moved it from the desert to a little bit more greener environment in Scotland. So because at that time I felt there'd been too many, like, you know, Hurt Locker, you know, Benghazi, all the different genres of films filmed in the desert. So I didn't want Batman just to feel like another war film, you know. And it could have been very easy done because it was a military airplane and things like that. So we're just trying to keep that down. And then proficiency. So when we filmed it, we managed to get the leaving the aircraft and the other aircraft underneath it flown by John Maloney from Planes of Fame in California, incredible pilot. And then we had two incredible pilots in the C-130. You know, we were right on the edge of like what they in aircraft terms is called full flaps were on, and we were dragging it through the sky at the slowest speed we could do it. You know, 110 knots, which
Looked
is probably
fast though.
yeah, it's still fast. You're looking at like 100 and what 26. 120, 25 mile an hour still
Of
outside
course.
the window, you know. So and the performers were great performers, majority ex-military, special forces soldiers who did the stunt, who are actually stuntmen, who ex-special forces guys who did the stunt. And then we broke it down into a couple of places, and then we had a real fuselage of the Bandeirante underneath a Super Puma helicopter at 6,000 feet. So guys came down, got inside, and then we did the gimbal work with Tom inside and stuff like that. And we did it, yeah, in 2.5 days. And it's because we were efficient and we had enough prep time, and our prep time was not cut down to the minimum. So we ended up trying to prep and shoot at the same time. We had the
Right, that's
safety.
crucial.
Yeah, it's crucial because we had huge safety levels, and I just had an incredible crew, really. And you know, logistically surrounding that particular part of the shoot sequence, we just had a lot of really lovely, good people.
That's incredible. Yeah, just to hear like the team is like a huge aspect, obviously, to the efficiency of it and how fast you guys were able to get it done, for sure.
Yeah, it is. And you know, being a stunt coordinator and second unit director is not only visionary in what you're trying to bring, trying to have a vision that you're trying to get across the screen, but it's also being very careful in choosing the right fit of personnel for the environment, the location, the sequence, or the film that you're making, and, you know, cohesive. You have a good cohesive team in a really tough environment who are themselves, you know, are very adaptable, then you can do anything.
Oh, yeah, of course, of course. Obviously, we couldn't talk about the Dark Knight trilogy without touching upon Heath Ledger's amazing performance. I know I'm a little bit curious about, like, his fighting style in the second movie when he comes face-to-face with Batman. And was that something that you developed with Heath? And, like, what was, like, the process of, like, designing it? Because I know he had, like, a knife in his shoe and, like, a bunch of different things going on there.
Yeah, actually, Heath was one of those, oh, he was an incredible human being, really. And,
oh, yeah,
but he was an incredible actor because, yeah, you know, like, it was Heath who came up with the idea about the knife in the shoe and stuff like that. Because he was so immersed in that character and how to make it better. And, and he's a performance. And it showed.
He was the Joker.
Yeah, he was the Joker at that point. Yeah. And, you know, on set, an absolute gentleman. Offset, you know, he was an absolute gentleman. I got, you know, myself and the team, we got along very, very well with him. We all had good friendships and good times. And sadly, obviously, he's missed. But he was one of those actors where you don't have to think about, oh, you do this and do that. It's like he helped the process, the environment that you're in. You say, oh, what about if I do this? And you go, okay, that looks great, but if we do this, it doesn't really work for what Chris wants on camera and stuff like that. So yes, it was collaborative. I mean, I think I've found with the actors I've worked with, I would say 98% of people are collaborative.
Yeah.
They just want to make what they're doing for their character, for their role, to be the best it can absolutely be, for what they're able to do physically to complement their drama, for the physical drama. So yeah, incredible experience with that man. You know, just had a really good, it was a great shoot to be on with him. And it was, you know, his loss was a huge surprise. It was before the film came out. He was on another project. It was a huge surprise. And yeah, just can't believe it still till today in some respects. But love working with him. I think I've loved working with everyone I've ever been with, really.
Yeah, that's crazy. And obviously his loss is, like, it's really sad. Yeah. But he does sound like he's really enthusiastic and, you know, he's constantly throwing out ideas from what you say.
That's what he was like. That's what he was like, you know. And he was a very physical guy, you know. Like, I mean, when he was a kid, he was in Australia. He was a go-karting champion for Western Australia and stuff like that. So, you know, he was a physical guy. You know, had good hand-eye coordination, which is very important. It's like being a very good dancer, you know, doing physical drama on a film set. If you, like, look at Patrick Swayze, for example, to use an example.
Yeah.
You know, he trained as a classical dancer. What an incredible physical mover in all the films that he did, like Roadhouse.
Dirty Dancing, yeah.
Dirty Dancing and that. And it was just a great attribute, you know?
Incredible. Yeah, no, obviously you definitely need people like that on the set, for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, you know? I kind of want to jump into the last segment of this segment on The Dark Knight. I know that there was obviously this big battle in New York where the police were all going against the mercenaries. I just kind of want to hear your take on what it was like coordinating that large scale battle. And obviously, was it like something totally different to you or new to you?
Not totally different or nor new. You know, I've done other projects, like we did Troy of Simon Crane, for example. There's a lot of background. But you approach it very much like a military exercise. You know, you divide people up into their capabilities and physical attributes. And we had 2 weeks of training outside of New York City. It was on the, I don't know the geographically exactly where it was, but it was up on the coast in a national park on this big, big open area. Like it might have been an ex-military installation at one time. You know, we had 2,000 extras, background physical players there. We divided them up. You know, I had a team of like 25, 30 people working for me, all very capable people. They helped the background artists just to train them a little bit in weapons, a little bit in the physical movement that Chris wanted to see, you know, for up against the two different groups. And we divided them up. We rehearsed them doing it, making sure all feel good, etc.
Yeah.
And then we did it down in Wall Street, you know, and it was a pretty crazy time. And it was one of those, I think in September time, we were in Wall Street and we had one of those crazy weather systems where it was the first time it had snowed in Wall Street at that time of year since 1865.
Wow.
So we had that going on too. Not only was it bitterly cold in New York, as you know, being a New Yorker, if it gets cold, it's cold.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And we had all these people, and they if you treat people good and you look after them, you get that back when you've got it on screen. And they all gave 100%. You know, they all gave 100%. Everyone went home safe. Everyone was happy. Mm-hmm. And we got some great, you know, some great shots, you know, and mm-hmm. it's been able to teach or train, I don't know what the right term would be, for the scene that you're doing, the background and the act, because you can have the best actors in the world, the best performers in the world, but if you don't look after the fringes and the background and the feel of the whole film, mm-hmm. it can be ruined in a heartbeat.
Wow.
You know, you can have the best performances from, you know, the great names in film. You know, we have the Leonardos, the Christian Bales and Tom Hardy's and, right. You know, Tom Selleck's or whatever, whoever it might be. You have great physical performances from these people. Mm-hmm. And if you have a bad audio, like background action or whatever's happening in the background of that particular scene, mm-hmm. if it's not done right, then you've wasted right. all that money, because you're never going to make it right.
Of course, yeah. And I'm kind of curious, because there's so much going on in that scene. Did you kind of like just tell them like, oh yeah, you guys can coordinate each of your own choreography, or like were you in charge of like everybody's?
I'm in charge of all of it, but what I do is I delegate, and then you've got the guys driving the tumblers, and you've got the guys driving the trucks, and then you got the guys and girls. I'd say guys. Our business is very much, you know, there's no discrepancy between one or the other. But, mm-hmm. you know, you got your people in the crowd. And, you know, like I had performers in the crowd. We had 90 performers, I think, on most days, 90 to 100 people, and then the motorbike riders. And so, you know, you have your different levels. You have the first, second, and third tier of people. The first tier being performance-wise the best. The next one's not as great. Then the third level is more about, you know, filling in the background, even though they're not as physical or got the same looks or whatever. You put the right people in there. They're on a radio and an ear set, and you know, when you call action, they're the ones encouraging and helping direct the background and those big scenes like that, to what you and Chris have discussed, you know, and you've rehearsed it. We rehearsed all of these scenes out on a location outside of New York before we came into New York, because we had very limited daylight time. We had very limited time on the streets because of the lockdowns and you know, the public cannot be blocked off from everywhere. So it's you've got to be very efficient in what you do, basically. And it all worked very well. You know, there's always going to be hiccups that you forget about. To be honest with you, I can't remember any of them because they would have been. But at the end of the day, we all went home safe. Right. Everyone felt good about it. The movie did okay. And the scene looked good. So
it was great. Yeah.
Whatever the cold and the memories like that, well, you just forget. They're secondary.
Right. Of course. Our team wrote up a little section here on Inception, just like two questions and wrapping it up. But please excuse me if you have somewhere to go. I don't want to take up too much of your time. Okay, great. Thank you so much. So we wanted to just touch upon Inception a little bit just to finish it off. There's one sequence in Inception in particular that I have a really great appreciation for, because I'm a skier and a snowboarder. And I know I show it to a lot of my friends, and I don't think they really understand too much about like the technicalities of what's happening in the sequence. But it was probably one of my favorite sequences in there. I was wondering if you could like break that down a little bit for us. Like, how did you achieve like the ski stunts? Was there like a ski stunt team?
We did that in a place called Fortress Mountain in Kananaskis, British Alberta, Canada. I bought in a lot of us all ski already, but I bought in some specialist skiers from Canada. A man called Ian McIntosh, another guy called James Heem. Incredible. I mean, look them up on YouTube. Incredible skiers. And we had guys and ladies who driving the skidoos and the vehicles. And
right.
And it was great. That was, we finished Inception in Canada. We finished up there on that. And it was, what a way to go out. It snowed, early snows. We got early snows, really good snow.
Oh, yeah.
Which was unusual for the year.
It's kind of like powder, right?
Oh, it was just incredible. And like, it's an old ski resort that's been closed down for years. So we would drive in each day. So we actually had areas where we could ski, and you know, there was a lot of timber to go in and amongst. So we go to work on the skidoos in the morning, and we'd set up the scenes and all the stunt performers and everyone. And then we'd ski home at night. You know, it was one of those, if you're a skier, it's a dream film for you. But yeah, I bought in expert skidoo drivers, expert skiers, performers, people who live in that environment, used to that environment. And that's the trick of it, is just being open-minded, that when you're somewhere, like, you know, you go to Canada, up in that snow mountains, well, that's what they do. You know, we go to New Mexico, they're cowboys. You know, that's what you do. You know what I mean? You find the right genre for the right people.
Right people in the right location too.
Exactly, you know, and that's the thing. It was fantastic.
Definitely. I'm assuming with a scene like this, it was pretty hard to like reset because you're obviously going down the mountain. And then obviously you have to go back up again and then reshoot.
Yeah, that's hanging on the skidoo and skiing back to the top. You know, that there's no ski lifts there. It's the old fashioned way, you know. It's the it's the poor man's, it's what they call the poor man heli skiing. You ride the skidoo back to the top, you get off and you ski down. Yeah.
Right, of course. That's awesome. I'm glad everyone was had a good time on that scene.
It
looked like a lot of fun.
it was a lot of fun, you know, everyone did.
From a skiing perspective, especially.
Exactly.
Yeah. Obviously we couldn't talk about Inception without talking about the infamous hallway fight scene, which had like really great action cinematography, and like there's anti-gravity stuff in there. It's shifting gravity. I know that in some interviews they've asked you before to break it down and you're like, oh, it's a secret. You know,
it's not so much of a secret in respects that, you know, I had an agreement with Chris I wouldn't divulge everything we do because
of course there's movie magic in there.
Some of the things that you do, yeah, you kind of like to keep a little bit of magic. It's like you don't tell everyone about your relationship, so you want to keep a bit of magic in there. You know, it's kind of the same thing. Look, you know, I had a lot of talented performers. There was a lot of wire work in there. The one thing I will say, though, I had great performers. Not all performers are good on wires. It's a difficult thing to master. And I had some great people. And what made that whole sequence, it was not so much the performers. I mean, we've got the corridor, you know, in zero G, et cetera. But the cast member, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he spent over a month with us rehearsing, exercising, building up, doing, you know, physical gym work to get certain parts of his body stronger so he could deal with the stresses of the wire work and the corridor spinning and stuff like that. And it's like anything, you know. If you're able to use the real cast member, if you can use him or her in the scene safely and they can give their performance, that's what they do best. They do it better than any stunt performer ever can, is performance.
Right, right.
Because they spend their whole lives performing. You know, they're, and he was lovely and he was very, very good at it. He took to it very well. And the reason it was successful, I believe, is because we gave him the opportunity to be the one key figure in the whole sequence, was Joseph. And he did every single scene, part
himself.
Of that scene. Yes, himself.
Wow.
He did every single part of it. And, you know, I can show you behind the scenes. I can show you rehearsal footage. It's all Joseph. And,
oh, yeah.
And what it turned out like, it's the most memorable thing in the film. Not only were the other performers good, but with Joseph, we followed him through that whole sequence in that corridor with him the whole time. And he did incredible.
That's awesome. And I did hear some stuff about Chris saying that he should be fit enough to do it again and again and again for multiple takes.
He was fit enough to do it day in, day out for when we're filming. You know, he did fantastic. And then straight after that, you know, honestly, the names escaped me, but he went and did a movie in New York where he's a bicycle courier.
Oh, yes. I did see that. Yeah.
He was fit as hell. He did a lot of that push bike riding all himself.
Right, right. Yeah. And he was like rolling on cars and whatnot too.
Yeah. So,
incredible.
You know, so that's the kind of caliber of people that Chris picks for his films. You know, they don't get there by accident, or it's all by design. You know, Chris,
of course.
You know, he casts his films very carefully.
Definitely. Casting is like a huge part of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I kind of wanted to wrap up here actually and give you a platform to like talk about your projects that you're working on now, of course. And like you mentioned, okay. Halo. It Halo Infinite was the one that you were working on?
It's Halo. It's Showtime TV and Microsoft 365, I think it's called. It's based on the video game, but with live action, and Master Chief. I don't know if you play the game.
Yeah, definitely. Big fan.
Well, there's a new number 18, I think it might be. It's coming out this year. It's been
awesome.
Going for 18 years.
Right.
It's made an incredible amount of money, over 9 million hours online playing. Whatever people play offline, who knows? You know, it's a $6 billion franchise over the 18, 20 years. And they're doing a TV series now. Pablo is playing Master Chief. We started it last year. I did 2 or 3 weeks of prepping for second unit, and then I had December, January, February off. I went back in the last week in February, and then the virus hit and we closed down. So, but I think we haven't got a start date yet, but I think August, end of August time this year, hopefully, we'll be back. I'm doing the second unit directing on this, which is great.
Incredible.
In
wow.
collaboration with Otto Bathurst, who's directing the first series, and he's executive producer. And it's been a really great experience. Me personally, I'm really looking out there. I'd love to, you know, like make my own project. I think with like Atomic Bombshell, you know, Extraction, films that have come out, it shows that the stunt coordinators, second unit directors are very capable of making great box office films.
John Wick 3 too. John Wick series.
The John Wick series, you know, Dave Lynch and Chad. And
8711, incredible.
Yeah, you know, they've all done great, you know, and I think they've shown that, we are capable. You know, we've had good mentors and we're capable of doing this. So me personally, I haven't really thought about, to be honest with you, Dan, I haven't thought about how I'm going to do it. But, I have a couple of projects that I
would have an idea.
Yeah, I have couple of really great ideas, and you know, and I'd like to produce them and get a good director or get, you know, direct them and do something like that in the future. That's what my goal would be in the future, is just creating more content.
Features. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, features and content, and just so that the one thing I thought about just recently in last year or so, in the whole of history, you know, if you're going to be remembered in history, you know, like you have your great leaders, you have your generals, you know, your Caesars and Napoleons and all these people in history who've been remembered. But what we do in cinema, in 1,000 years' time, there'll be somebody sitting there looking at a digital copy or some other medium, right, you know, and saying, wow, look at what they did back then. Like we look back now at, you know, silver, the oldest of pictures that we can imagine, or drawings. You go, you know, you look at a Bushman's drawing in Botswana and Africa, you go, wow, they hunted elephants.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these guys are 4 foot tall and their food source is a jumbo. They're hunting an elephant with a bow and arrow.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And so it's recorded history. And the difference is now our name will be also part of that recorded history. So the aim of it is whatever we do and whatever I do is to do it to the best of the ability that I can do, and no compromise there, because that's the only way I may be remembered. Because, you know, the people don't remember the normal person around the streets. They just remember if it's in print or it's on in a photo or things like that. It's great. So that's what I hope, the legacy I hope to leave is of just really good work done in the media section, you know, cinema and film.
Definitely.
And TV.
Yeah, I think like a lot of the stunt guys that come on this show, they always say pain is temporary, but film is forever.
Yeah, that has a certain point, you know, I just think that it's just. And what's been happening in the last 100 years, I think the performances have definitely excelled themselves and got greater. But
100%.
You look at what people doing back in the 20s, and you know, the great barnstorming, you know, the great Waldo Pepper about barnstorming or any of these old films, you know, and they did incredible work, and it's still there to watch. It's still there to appreciate.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Tom, for being on the podcast. We can't wait to see what you make in the future and what you choose to decide to direct and, like you said, making features and whatnot. All the really, really exciting stuff. We always like to end these podcasts off with like a little bit of like a fun question. So our last question for you is, so since you've worked on like Batman films, X-Men films, Lara Croft films, so much stuff, if you could give one superhero or super character the Bollywood treatment, who would it be?
Oh, have someone like do a Bollywood film?
Like, yeah, like in the way that Bollywood, you know, creates action films, like super exaggerated
Without a doubt, Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh, look, you look what Leo's done. You know,
right.
Look at the films, Blood Diamond.
Oh, yeah.
Django, all these films. Look at the diverse characters he's played. If anyone can pull it off, Leonardo DiCaprio could pull it off. I mean, seriously, he is so versatile. He's a great guy too, to be honest with you. But he is so versatile. He's so adapting, and he loves what he does. Okay, he loves what he does. It's not just a paycheck. Mm-hmm. I mean, he probably doesn't need a paycheck anymore, bless him. But
of course,
it's not about a paycheck. It is about the craft of it. And look at the Scorsese stuff he's done, and just all the different genres. You know, he's adaptable. He can adapt, and he does it great.
Oh yeah, I could see him doing well in those Bollywood music videos, like at the end.
Oh, 100%. He would be right in. I believe in my heart that he'd be right in there. He could dance. He could sing. He could do it for him. You know?
Wow. Incredible.
All right.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Tom. I really, really appreciate it. Hopefully after Dune comes out, we can probably do another episode. And if you could break that down for us as well, that would be amazing to have you on again.
Anytime. It's been an absolute pleasure. Like I say, I don't do many interviews, but you guys have been an absolute pleasure. And thank you ever so much for the opportunity.
Appreciate it.
And I look forward to the future.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Cheers. Bye.
Yep.